This is the place, and this is the time. Here and now, the mystery awaits to break into our experience, to change our minds, to change our lives, to change our ways, to help us see the world and the whole of life in a new light. This is the place. This is the time. Here and now, let us praise the mystery by joining together in song. At the center of our service and at the center of our lives, we take this time to light candles of memory, candles of hope, or because we feel troubled, blessed, conflicted, or simply because we'd like to add a little light to the world. Join me now in an attitude of prayer. Mystery without name and mystery beyond all naming, we give thanks this morning in this season of Thanksgiving. We give thanks for roofs over our heads, hot showers and steaming baths, food in our pantries and on our tables, for the air that we breathe and each heartbeat as it drums out our life. In this giving of thanks, we trust that we have given enough of ourselves, our talents, our riches, our dreams. Now help us, Great Spirit, that is the principle of movement, to move ahead into our lives, fully up to the front of our being, exposed and weathered but never weary of the direct, personal and unmediated experiences of our lives. Help us, Great Mother of Necessity, to keep inventing our way to see the world, our way to be the world. Now may that authentic, upfront, direct connection to life pull us toward itself, and in so pulling, carry us close to the source of all being, step by step, hour by hour, in the name of everything that is holy, and that is precisely everything. Amen. I'm reading this morning from John 1:14, and it's the Patterson translation, the one I like so much. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like father, like son, like mother, like daughter. Generous inside and out, true from start to finish. For those of you who might be offended by the way I'm dressed today in my clericals, I take note of your offense, but I do not apologize. I ask rather that you honor your feelings of being offended as an intelligent and thoughtful congregants, that you hold your judgment. On the weekend of November 19th and 20th, I was involved with a vigil of 20,000 people of faith. This vigil honored all those killed, tortured, or disappeared by graduates of the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. When sides are so designated, it's important that everyone know that when it comes down to shirts and skins, it's immediately apparent which side you're on. Turning away now from this sermon would be like seeing the first squiggle in a corner of a painting and deciding that you don't like that painting and it's not going to hang in your house. Do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Let me paint the rest of the painting. It's a painting of protest and people, a painting of faith and faithfulness, a painting of community and communion, a painting of life and loyalty, and finally, a painting worth a lot more than these words. When it's done, when the final strokes have been put on the painting and I sign it, we'll see what we've done and we'll see clearly what we've outlined. Now, let's make some broad strokes, okay? Give us an idea of what we're looking like. The main gate at Fort Benning, Georgia, is down a street 6 blocks long. On one side, the right side, there are abandoned apartment buildings. Those buildings are used by organizers for their different events. And in between the apartment buildings, the puppetistas use that space for rehearsal. The puppetistas are basically men and women who man 30-foot puppets. They put on morality plays in which, of course, good always wins. In order to maintain a sense of control over this vigil, the United States Army at the fort, in conjunction with the city of Columbus, Georgia, have put chain link fencing up the entire length of the six blocks. There's lots of rules. There's a sign that says what the rules are. You can only have sticks with protest signs, only sticks of a certain size, only crosses of a certain size. They don't want 2x4s of wielding length. And you can't wear a mask. If you're caught wearing a mask, you're approached by a policeman, told to take the mask off, and if you don't, you're arrested. Some protesters get around the mask rule by painting their faces, and some come dressed as white-faced mimes. On the right side of the street, as you walk down toward the main gate, there are tables from the different organizations that are represented there, about 40, 50 tables in all. Everyone's there, from the peaceniks, who are for total nonviolent civil disobedience, to the American Communist Party, which is, of course, in favor of the overthrow of the present form of government. As one communist gentleman explained to me, revolution is the only way that those in power will relinquish their grip on power. I don't know if that's true or not, but Martin Luther King Jr. did say, freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. One thing's for sure. Capitalism is alive at those 40 to 50 tables. Even the communists are selling things. There's buttons, there's bumper stickers, of some of the most amusing and thoughtful bumper stickers and buttons I've ever seen, along with some of the most tacky and obscene ones. That's why I didn't bring any here today. Now, we're going to look at the main gate at the fort. A few years ago, the main gate was left open. Of course, there was a military policeman on duty. But when Martin Sheen and 4,000 protesters just simply walked onto the fort, well, things changed. They had to put those protesters and Martin Sheen in buses, and they had to cart them away. And somewhere between putting them on like 25, 30 buses and shipping them out of the fort area, the United States Army and the city of Columbus, Georgia, figured processing 4,000 protesters and jailing them was beyond the city's financial capabilities, so they just let them go. Since that time, guess what? The gate's been locked. Now, the Army has put up another temporary chain-link fence in front of the real fence, and the city of Columbus, not wanting to be outdone by the United States Army, has put up yet another fence. So now there are three fences to get over, under, around, or through if you want to protest, you want to be arrested and become a prisoner of conscience. Let's paint those fences, all three of them, as gray hash marks. They look ugly, but don't judge them either, because they're going to be transformed by the end of the protest. In 2004, 17 people went over or through the fences, all three of them, and were arrested as prisoners of conscience. And one of those was a 76-year-old blind man. Where there's a will, there is a way. This year, over 40 protesters became prisoners of conscience, and I did pass one of the holes in the fence. And for a New York second, I thought about it, but you know what? I don't think Dr. Lohr would pay me to be in prison. The word that was made flesh and dwelt among us in Columbus, Georgia, was the word no. Let's paint this no in giant red letters with a bloody exclamation point at the end. The word made flesh in almost every protest is the word no. It's one thing to disagree with governmental policies, and it's quite another thing to embody that disagreement with your flesh and blood. At the School of America's Vigil this year, as I said, over 20,000 people gave up their individual bodies to embody as a community the power of the word no. We are saying no to oppression. We're saying no to the School of America's. We are saying no to torture. We're saying no to death squads. We're saying no to tyranny. By the way, this oppression, this torture, these death squads and various tyrannies have been sponsored since 1984 by Democratic and Republican presidents and Congresses alike. It's nice to know that on some level, bipartisanship is alive and well. All right, there's too much stuff that's going to go into this one painting, so we're going to make it a triptych. You know what a triptych is. Three panels, they're linked together. They might not be the same subject, but they relate to one another. The center panel will, of course, be the main gate and those fences. By the way, when a triptych is finished, do you sign all three panels or just the one in the middle? Somebody tell me afterward, I'm not sure. The right panel that we're going to paint now is a panel of the Americas before the time of the European and the horse. The ancient Incas, Mayas, and Aztecs celebrated to their god by sacrificing human beings. Imagine a religion which must sacrifice a human being to their god. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Simply unbelievable. I spent a lot of time in the village of Puebla. Puebla was so high in the mountains that even in June and July, without air conditioning, you can sleep like a baby. It was there in Puebla that I first heard one such story of human sacrifice. It seemed in the ancient villages, they would gather from all the small villages into a rather large village, all the young men. And they would choose from all those young men, just one young man. They would choose the one that was the smartest, one that could run the fastest, that could write the best poetry, that loved his mother the most, and they would take that young man from his family and place him into the royal court. And there he would be stripped, his body would be bathed, and he would be dressed in a robe of the finest raiment and offered a meal of the most sumptuous fruits and vegetables of the region. After dinner, the high priest would take him aside and teach him to play tiny clay flutes that made music that would remind anyone of heaven and the angels. And that's not all he got. The young girls of the villages, the young ladies of the court, none of these young girls or young ladies could deny this young man any desire he had, any desire whatsoever. Now, this went on for an entire year. He had everything he wanted, when he wanted, as much as he wanted. But at the end of a year, at an appointed hour, he would meet a high priest at the base of a pyramid, and together they would begin ascending the pyramid. On the first few steps, he would take those tiny clay flutes, throw them down, and break them, you see, because he was no longer in need of music that would remind him of heaven and the angels. Further up, he would take off that robe and rend it in two, because, you see, he was no longer in need of fine raiment. Finally, totally naked, he would walk to the top of the pyramid, and there a high priest would take a knife made of obsidian and thrust it into his chest and pluck from it his still beating heart. Imagine seeing everything your heart desires taken from you. Imagine a society which calls on their youth to sacrifice themselves so that crops may grow, so that oil may flow, so that those with money and power can remain with money and power. Unbelievable, isn't it? Simply unbelievable. Now, how do you break with tradition? Where does one find the courage to stop things that seem to have been going on forever? I turn now to the left-hand panel. In the middle, we've got the main gate. No protesters yet. On the right-hand side, we have the pyramid and the human sacrifice. Now, I want to paint for you the left side of the triptych. When I lived in Japan from 1959 to 1961, I was undergoing an orthodontic treatment in Tokyo. Every other week, I would travel by train into Tokyo by myself, and I was 12 years old, the largest city in the world, and I had no fear. This has more to do with the Japanese than it does with me. Right across the street from the Ochanomizu Station, there was the Christian Student Center. The Christian Student Center was operated by Catherine Smith, a Scots-Irish missionary. Now, Catherine, when she got to Japan in the 1930s, she wasn't sure what kind of work she was going to be doing. But when she saw the way the Japanese people and Japanese families treated young unmarried women who were pregnant, she knew exactly what must be done. She started Sensei, that's what they called her, it's a Japanese word for teacher. Sensei Smith started the Sunshine School for Girls. a place where these young pregnant women could live out their pregnancies, have their children and keep them, or have them and have them adopted. So painted on the left-hand side is the Sunshine School for Girls. There's lots of golden light showering down upon the school, and outside there's kind of this matronly, crone-like woman who stands with her arms extended to the world. The expression on her face is so wonderful that we wish we could go in and visit with her. The courage displayed by Catherine Smith and others is, in fact, the courage to do what is right. There's an old Scotch-Irish saying, which I'm tempted to tell you, and I'm going to. It has been said, there is nothing more terrible than a band of brigands led by a cutthroat commander, except it be a group of Scottish Presbyterians rising from their knees in prayer, about to go out and do what they see to be the will of God. It has been said recently that it doesn't matter whether we're right or wrong, it's how persuasive we are. It has been said that to couch arguments in the terms of being right is an incorrect manner of going about things, but I'm here today to tell you that it may not matter in the end whether we're right or wrong, but it does matter whether it is right or wrong. And now I want to put the finishing touches on this painting of ours. I want to paint for you the day of the vigil in which the names of all those disappeared, tortured, or killed by the graduates of the School of Americas are read over loudspeakers. I want to paint the 20,000 of us who processed in a slow circle. I was about a third of the way back, and I timed it on my watch. It took 18 minutes for me to take the first step. And as each name is read over the loudspeakers, 20,000 voices responded in Spanish, presente. ¿Cómo se dice presente en inglés? You say, present. How do you say presente in English? Present. I am here. I am present. These people are present in that ceremony. These people who have been killed, disappeared, and tortured, they have not been forgotten. They've not been lost to us. And as long as we gather and read their names, they never will be. Nearly everyone in the crowd of 20,000 is carrying a cross with someone killed, tortured, raped, or murdered. These crosses are raised heavenward as each name is read. Can you see there in the middle panel of the triptych the long line of mourners with their white crosses held skyward? Listen carefully. Can you hear the sound of 20,000 voices raised in protest? Can you hear the screams of those tortured and raped? Can you see babies ripped from their mother's breast and impaled upon bayonets made in this country, affixed to weapons also made in this country? Can you feel the desolation of powerlessness, the futility of poverty, the inconsequence of a life so led? Listen now as I read in the manner of the vigil these few names. Archbishop Oscar Romero, gunned down while celebrating the Mass. Agustina Vigil, 25 years old and pregnant at the time of her death. Domingo Claros, 29-year-old woodcutter. Cristina Mayo Claros, 9-year-old son of Domingo Claros. Maria Dolores Amaya Claros, 5-year-old daughter of Domingo Claros. Ignacio Acurio, rector of the University of Central America in San Salvador, outspoken critic of the army. Ignacio Martin Barro, who studied effects of war on the human psyche. Segundo Montes, a strong advocate for refugees and human rights. Amano Lopez, a gifted counselor and pastoral worker. Juan Ramon Moreno, gifted preacher and retreat leader. Elba Ramos, the Jesuit's housekeeper, remembered as sensitive and intuitive. C. Selena Ramos, Elba's 14-year-old daughter who worked as a catechist. And now here's where the main gate gets transformed. As each of the protesters walked past the gate, each of those crosses was placed on the gate, some high, some low. The flowers were there, the signs of protest. In the middle of all this repression and death, there is a ray of hope, a living memorial. Now, I have to admit that for most of us, the phrase, "and the Word was made flesh," is a bizarre metaphysical statement from some other world. We can't actually picture a mere word becoming skin with blood vessels beneath it. But in our real world and in real time, the Word becomes flesh in a more mundane way. As I said last week, 20,000 people whose word was no got on buses, planes, cars, and trains and traveled to a remote part of Georgia near the Alabama border. They assembled in a mass of flesh, 3 million pounds of flesh altogether. And what they were saying, what we are saying, was, you hear the people say no, and you don't listen because you think it's only words, but look, we are people in whom that no has been so strong that it has brought us here to show you our faces, to tell you our names if you demand that, and to say, no, this is not the way civilized humans treat one another. We are like you. We bleed when we're cut, we cry when we're hurt, and when we're tortured and murdered, we die. We come to awaken that human part of you, that part that also knows this is wrong. This is vile. This is evil. It degrades everything we hold to be high and holy. No, we may not kidnap innocent people who stand in the way of our greedy and bloody power. No, we may not take them to shameful places, do inhumane and shameful things to them, make them hurt, make them bleed, make them cry out, make them die. No, we are saying no, standing before you as your brothers and sisters, as fellow citizens of a country we love even more than you do. We love it even more than you do because we love it enough to stand against its most shameful actions, to stand against those actions in person, in the flesh, in your gun sights, and say, here we are in the flesh. We are the Word no, standing before you. We are the Word become flesh, asking, now can you hear us? No, now can you hear us? No, no, no! No. It is finished.